You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Living through a war is difficult enough, but what about living after the war? Chang-Rae Lee explores that in The Surrendered, which follows the lives of three very different people whose paths intersect in the aftermath of the Korean War. This is Chang-Rae Lee's fourth novel. His first Native speaker received the Hemingway Foundation Pen Award. He's also won the Asian American Literary Award and was selected by The New Yorker as one of the 20 best American writers under the age of 40. In today's New York Times, Michiko Kakutani calls The Surrendered, which is published by Riverhead, a gripping and fiercely imagined work that burrows deep into the heart of war, leaving us with a choral portrait of the human capacity for both barbarism and transcendence. I'm very pleased that it brings Chang-Rae Lee back to our show today. Hi.
Hi, Leonard.
The novel opens in Korea in the 1950s, long before you were born. What was the status of the Korean War at that time?
You mean after the 1950s?
At the beginning of the book.
The book starts out in 1950, just on the eve of hostilities, and it concerns one of the main characters. She's only about 11 years old at the time. She's traveling with her two fraternal twins, siblings, and they're on a train heading southward.
Her name is June.
And her name is June. They're presumably heading toward safety. But the thing that makes this journey a little different is that they're on top of the train because the train is full. And, of course, that leads to some trouble and misfortune.
You're not willing to reveal that? That's where the book begins.
Well, what happens in the course of the ride, and, of course, there's memories of the days that have brought them there, the initial... rousing from their homes, the execution of her father, the conscription of her older brother, and then the deaths of her mother and sister.
And then she watches as the train runs over her siblings, amputating their legs, causing them to bleed to death. Didn't something similar happen to your father?
Well, it did, and his description of it to me was just a few sentences, not at all detailed. But he talked to He told me about his brother, who was younger than he, and the same exact thing happened. The train that they were riding atop lurched in the middle of the night, and he fell between the cars.
And you said your father hardly spoke about it, but
no.
Did you have a sense that he had been scarred by that? It's such a horrific thing to experience.
I could only assume he'd been scarred, but you'd never know it by meeting the man, or up until that point, my living with him for 22 years. He'd never mentioned it, but of course, when he did talk about it, it was very painful for him. And in fact, it was so painful, and I hadn't seen his face contort in that way. He didn't quite cry, and I told myself that I probably should not ask him about this again.
Well, you've written about other people who've been scarred by the horrors of war. Doc Hata, the protagonist of your second novel, A Gesture Life, is haunted by memories of his wartime service in Burma and the brutal mistreatment of the Korean women by the Japanese military.
Yeah. That's a story, obviously, that came about from my historical research. And, of course, I felt I had a personal and familial connection to it, or at least a connection of heritage and my own shock at my ignorance of that time. So that story involves war and involves suffering, but I saw that more historically. This story and this novel, I would say, is in many ways the book that I have the deepest emotional connection to, and not just because of what happened to my father.
Well, your mother.
Yeah, my mother's experience, mostly I heard about her experience in the colonial period when the Japanese were running the country, but there was all these stories of privation.
Your mother had stomach cancer, the disease that is killing June when we meet her again in New York in 1986.
Yeah, but the June's character is not my mother's character. June's a very hard-edged, difficult shell of a person. My mother was a wonderful, loving person who gave everything to us, but But I did want to open up the novel with June in trouble, and the kind of trouble that would most disturb her, which was this, you know, mortality.
Well, is it possible to write fiction without drawing upon your personal experiences, whether you're setting it in Korea in 1950 or whether you're setting it in New York in 1986?
I think it's possible, but I don't know that in certain stories would benefit from a detached or, you know, kind of displaced position by the writer. I mean, this book particularly is about a visceral kind of condition after trauma or injury. And for me, a part of the trick of the book and the hope of the book is to give the reader that feeling. And I don't think I could have gotten into the mindsets of the characters without having a real impassioned connection and sort of direct line to their hearts and souls.
Well, you mentioned getting into the mindsets of the characters. Your previous novels were all told in first person, told by hyphenated Americans, a Korean-American, a Japanese-American, and an Italian-American. But this story you've told in third person.
Yeah. Well, I felt as if, because of the scale of this story, I likened it to this mural almost. I felt as if the canvas was so big that I needed third person to be able to look at all the times and places, but also because there are multiple main characters. I didn't want the aftermath and the expression of all this violence to be told, to be funneled through just one psyche.
There's also a departure in another way, because the previous books have all been about first-generation Americans and the complexities and confusions of living as in an immigrant or as the child of an immigrant.
Yeah.
Not here.
Not here. I mean, June is obviously a Korean woman come to this country, but she really has no interest or inclination in thinking about her quote-unquote position in society, you know, how she thinks of herself as having some kind of, you know, dissonance with society. You know, she's concerned with other issues, which is, which are centered around getting by, survival.
Another main character is Hector Brennan, who is not an immigrant. I doubt that it's a coincidence, however, that he comes from the town of Ilion, New York.
No.
Since Hector of mythology came from Ilium, which was another name for Troy. Mm. And his town has a major arms factory.
Yeah. Well, that was just serendipity. I mean, I like the town, the name of Ilion, I just thought it was sort of neat to have it. And then when I looked into it, I realized that it was the home of Remington Arms. Mm-hmm. Made all those famous rifles and other things, typewriters. But of course,
there really is a town called Ilion?
Oh, yes, Ilion, New York. It's just off the Mohawk Canal and Erie Canal and the Mohawk River. But my Hector, of course, is not the noble, heroic figure of
in the classical sense, anyway.
No, he's willfully ignoble, and he's down on his luck and wants to stay there.
And if anybody represents the title "The Surrendered," it's him.
Yes, he's someone who's, you know, there's a scene in the book where he bashes himself against a tree to feel alive, partly because he has this mysterious streak of immortality to him. He's trying to feel something, and which is actually mostly pain, and to punish himself for what he's perceived to be his role in other people's demise and misery.
Chang-Rae Lee's latest novel is called The Surrendered. It's published by Riverhead Books. Could you read a little bit for us?
Yeah, sure.
And by the way, while you're looking for a passage, you've been here for all of your novels, and it's...
Is that a record? Every single one?
You may be. We tried to do that with Joyce Carol Oates, but we didn't have enough years. I've only been here 25 years. But still, it's been 6 years since I last saw you.
Yes. And
has this book taken that long?
It took about 4.5 years of concentrated and earnest writing, and I think it's... It's because of the scale of the story, the multiple primary characters, and then also I think it took me a long time to feel comfortable with with my approach to the story and the language that I wanted to use.
And writing it in first person? I mean, third person?
No, that wasn't so much of a problem. I actually felt so much more liberty and possibility. And I'm thinking now that maybe I'll never write in first person again. But
I guarantee somewhere along the line you'll alternate first and third.
I probably will. But the third person, of course, as Russell Banks once told me that when you have too many choices, it's a problem. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that got to be an issue.
Because first person forces you to always be in the mind of your character.
Yeah, and those first three books of mine are so much aside from what they're about, you know, the subject matter and their settings. There's so much about an inquiry into a certain kind of consciousness.
What are you going to read for us?
This is just the first couple paragraphs of the book, and it opens up with them on the train. The journey was nearly over. The night was unusually chilly, the wind sharpened by the speed of the train as it rolled southward through the darkened valley. The cotton blanket June had stolen was large enough to spread as a tarp, and at the same time wrap around her younger brother and sister and herself. But it was threadbare, and for brief stretches the train would accelerate and the wind would cut right through to them. It had not been a problem the night before, but now they were riding on top of the boxcar, as there was no more room within any of them, even as the train was more than a dozen cars long. A massive phalanx of refugees had met the train at the last station, and in the time it took her siblings to relieve themselves by the side of the tracks, they had lost their place and had to climb the rusted ladder between the cars, June running alongside for 50 meters until her brother was high enough on the rungs so she herself could jump up and on.
Chang Rae Lee, reading from his latest novel, The Surrendered, which is published by Riverhead. Hector and June have known each other. They meet at a certain point. They have a son. And that's one of the part of the plot line. Their search for him. He's disappeared. There's a third major character, Sylvie. Was all of this there at the start?
No, it wasn't. In my first attempts at this book, which actually date back to before I finished A Gesture Life, so this is about almost 12 years ago.
This is two and a half.
Yes.
If you're thinking Fellini ways.
Well, absolutely. And this is the book my attempts at this book were singularly following characters. So the book was about, say, a form of June or a form of Hector or a form of Sylvie. And it wasn't until after I finished Aloft that I decided that the story probably required that I put these skeins together and write a much much larger story than I'd originally conceived. It was a book that took a long time in its gestation, and the conception changed over time. And again, I felt as if I did need those three voices. You mentioned the word chorale, and I wanted that feeling. I didn't want the sense. I wanted to follow these individuals and explore their histories and their intricate psyches and consciousnesses. But I also wanted a sense of a larger scale of force that was pressuring them, the backdrop behind all their yearnings and struggles, that be large and feel almost unbearable.
So this occurred to you, at least on some level, many years ago. Did it just sit on the back of your head? Had you written a number of pages that you went back to?
Oh, absolutely. I wrote probably 50 pages on Hector as a fallen priest, actually, and then June as someone else and Sylvie as someone else. And all that material is, of course, now gone.
Are you doing the same sort of thing now with a new book?
I'm just sketching out a new book. I've learned over the years that I'm very bad at writing a book during the talking period of the previous book.
But I would think that in talking about a book that you've written where you probably didn't even understand everything you tried to say and are putting some things together, or other people are putting things into your head, like, isn't this really about so-and-so,
right.
That certain ideas will coalesce and you'll know where you might want to go or where you might not ever want to go again.
You'd think that, but so much of writing for me is that moment of discovery after the due diligence, and that moment of discovery is always such a surprise. I liken it to a kind of improvisation. Of course, it's purposeful improvisation. But without that moment, I don't know that I would find writing that enjoyable. I mean, writing is difficult and mostly unenjoyable, actually, most of the time. But what, you know, that spark of surprise in terms of language or structure or character, that's what brings me back all the time. And that's what actually, I think, impels me, both as just as a person, but as someone who's trying to craft a story.
The surprise in writing a sentence and then thinking, what have I just written?
What have I just written? And look at the possibilities that this has opened that I had not quite either thought of before or believed in before. Sometimes you can find a certain kind of faith that all your other work isn't offering you. You know, you're often writing in the dark, at least I am. I do very roughly plan out stories, but certain put certain beacons in front of me, but I don't know how I'm going to get there. So I'm traveling in this boat at night, and don't know where the rocks are, and I have no searchlight. And sometimes you'll hit something and you'll realize, well, this is where I am and this is where I need to go next.
Well, I'm glad that you finally landed here.
Yeah.
Chang Rae Lee's latest novel is The Surrendered, and it's published by Riverhead Books. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thanks a lot, Leonard.